Roll call has been taken, and let the record reflect that all members are present, with the exception of Water and Wastewater Manager Kaney, Project Manager Sadler, and District Water Engineer Schoen.
Okay, at this point, in the agenda for public comments, and there is no public at this particular moment. If public arrives later, we'll reopen that item. So we're going to close public comments. And we're going to C1 draft minutes of February 21st.
Make a motion we approve the draft minutes as shown.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And with that, we'll go to D1 presentation, water, wastewater update.
There's no presentation at this time, so we'll turn it back over to you.
Okay. And now we'll go to the discussion regarding NPDES permit.
Okay. So we have several discussion items, NPDES permit, UV disinfection, deunification, the master plan, and the land management, all wastewater items that we need to update today. So to start with, I've handed out several handouts, but we'll talk them over in order. The first sheet we have up is a discussion from Stantec of the UV system. So as a quick backdrop to this, as part of the last filtration project, we installed some new UV equipment at the UV system. One of our current NPDES permit requirements is that we be able to treat to Title 22 disinfection limits, which is a higher standard than we currently treat to now. The equipment that we have in one of the channels is supposed to be rated for the new standard, and when we did the filter project, we jumped onto the last channel with the last channel UV equipment, and so that's part of the filter project. As part of that project, we conducted a test to see, do we meet Title 22? We certainly met it at current flows, like the flows that we normally go through the plant, but the real question was at the design flow, we prevented some pumps so we could get water to go in a circle, and we increased the flow of the whole plant, or through the UV system, so we could test it under the worst case conditions. And there was some issues with that test, and long before it is, we didn't quite pass the test at high flows. Pass the test at low flows, and pass the test high flows. They basically said our existing channel, even though we had changed light bulbs and cleaned it up and got already cleaned for the test, didn't pass really well at any of the flows. And the new channel we put in passed on all the low flows, but as higher flows got in, they speculated there was some turbulence in the channel, and that created our reason for not passing the test at that time. Now, the test at that time was to dose a certain dosage, 100 millijoules of light energy into the water, and Trojan was under penalty if they don't quite meet it. You know, so there was a lot of, you know, we tested at one dose. We didn't test at all possible. So why this came up is in recent conversations with the district manager and Dina, I pointed out that, you know, we're paying down a schedule of projects here that are coming up. You know, we're talking about what are we doing with plant one, what we're doing with the master plan, what are we doing for Dina, and then what is it we're going to build and on what timeline. I'm going to give you that timeline in a minute, but I happen to mention in the middle of that something that people hadn't been thinking about or hadn't heard about or just kind of got lost. So everyone knows about deunification. We've been talking about that for years, and that, you know, we're doing the master plan to understand one last time what we need to build for deunification and what's, you know, what do we have to do with the current conditions that we have. All right. On the UV system, that hasn't been talked about much. And then the other thing that's been talked about a lot previously, but not a lot recently, is plant one. You know, so plant one discussion of do we need plant one or don't we need plant one? Do we need to continue to invest in plant one or not? That's going to be addressed as part of this master plan. What's important about that is we're going to spend a lot of money to upgrade our process in a minute, you know, shortly. And the question is, do we need to spend that money in plant one also, or is it going to be enough to spend in plant two, right? So that's part of the question that's going to happen in the master plans is, do we need plant one? So currently in the CIP, we're talking about two projects in the CIP. One is the deunification project in general, and the other is some general repairs to plant one that have been sliding for years, that we've been postponing until we get a decision about what are we going to do projects in the CIP currently. What hasn't been discussed much is the UV system. Now, this UV system, we basically found out last summer, summer 2017, when we started the process and got ongoing, we had these results. We weren't overly concerned at the time, we're still not overly concerned, but we did get a result where we're not quite meeting specifications on what the permit's going to ask us to do for all flows that we want to plant to treat. In that test report, they speculated, they didn't have a lot of answers, they just said, well, maybe it's hydraulics, maybe it's a little bit of this, maybe a little bit of that. So we said in the master plan, we're going to address UV specifically. Now, I don't think the cost is a lot to address UV. I think there's several options. But it is an item in the master plan, and Stan Tech is working on the master plan. They picked up this memo, which is the first memo that you see here on top of your desk.
So,
and, go ahead.
In the master plan, is that going to say what we do instead of UV or to enhance UV?
To enhance UV. Replacing UV would be millions.
Yeah.
Enhancing UV is probably less than $100,000, you know, in that kind of ballpark, you know, kind of thing. So the plant, the town used to not use UV. The town used to use chlorine. They used to use chlorine gas specifically. So the issue of chlorine gas became safety concerns for the town. There were new regulations passed because they had some chlorine gas fills. People don't like breathing chlorine, and so they had some people killed. Not here, but in other places in the country. So new regulations came around chlorine gas. The town did an evaluation, and this is prior to the district forming. This was back when Sanitary 9 held us and ran the facilities out here. But basically, they researched it and said, okay, we're going to get rid of chlorine and go to UV. The town's been UV ever since like 1997. So we've gone through various upgrades of UV equipment as the technology has changed, as equipment's worn out, et cetera. And as I said, we're meeting Title 22 limits right now with the flows we have in both channels. But when we tried to run the flow up to 4 MGD, which is the peak flow that the plant is designed to experience under wet weather conditions, they didn't pass, you know. And so they've been analyzing, hey, why didn't they pass? They've been looking like, did we do the test right? You know, did the test go right? Did there any mistakes in the testing? Is there things in the channel? There are some turbulence in the channel, and this memo basically is saying, hey, there is some turbulence in the channel. There's some things you can do about that turbulence. They're working on it, but they have some ideas in-house about, you know, maybe some little baffles in the water flow, maybe removing the existing weir that's in front of the channel. But it hadn't been talked about before because it was surprising to Mike and Dina. They hadn't heard about it before. So I wanted to bring it up first just so people, I kind of get it back on people's radar. In my opinion, the cost is so minor, less than $100,000 means minor, that compared to the D9 project and the Plant 1 improvements, it's just along for the ride. It's essentially the size and kind of cheating. It's just like,
yeah, we don't know how to resolve the problem.
Well,
it's a $100,000 try.
Yeah, we'll say try, but let's put this, we're meeting it now. You know, it's not like we're not meeting disinfection. And even looking at the report, the report seems to identify when the testing was done that worst case is we have to dose at a higher dose than what we wanted to under peak flow conditions. You know, like if we ever get 4 MGD, by the way, I've never seen 4 MGD through the plant, but if we ever could get it, you know, under that one condition for that one day, we might have to dose a higher dose. So it doesn't look to me like crazy scary, but it is a problem we need to resolve because our permit says by a certain date, we have to be Title 22 compliant for all of our plant flows. You know, as an engineer, just because we need it now, I know I have to look towards the future and say, are we always going to need it? So if you guys want to feel comfortable all the time, then yeah, we're not going to have a problem with this. And so a little bit of attention has to be paid to the UV system. So we have this memo from Stantec, basically recommending doing some modifications and then some testing. The question will be, when do we want to do testing? How soon do we want to jump on that project? In terms of, you know, do we want to try some modifications, do we, you know, anytime soon, or just do it with the main project? You know, some of this could come out a little sooner if we want to try and mess around with this. Or we're assuming at the moment that we're just going to tack along with the regular project and we'll do some of this as part of that work.
My feeling is to do it now.
So if we're going to do it now, I think what we do is get through the master plan. And then when we get into design on the regular project, it's going to take a year to design all the improvements.
out, we've got time.
Right.
To catch up with it during the process.
Right.
If we find, if we wait an hour under the gun to be able.
Yeah, under the gun, exactly. So,
And this in no way will go away even by chance with the D9?
No. Yeah, they're not ready. Yeah, not ready. So, they're recommending a program. So the master plan's going to kind of recommend a process, if you would. It'd be the master plan recommendation. It would be make some modifications, put some baffles in, let's do a test again. But looking at the data, they're not like, no one's thinking this is going to work at some point. You know, I mean, no one's thinking this is a complete lost cause and we can't make this work. You know, UV systems work all the time, all over the place.
At higher flows than we have.
Yes, yeah, you know. So one of the things that's really causing the issue was, you know, the plant was designed in 1999, built in 2000, it finished construction in 2002, when you guys had an old UV system that was designed in 1997. So what happened is, the new design matched that design, because you already had one. So we put the new design here, and matched that design. Well, that company went out of business. Then we needed upgrades on the equipment, so then we put new equipment in, but we had to retrofit the channel. Okay, so we've been retrofitting this channel, we've done it twice now. We've retrofitted this channel twice for new equipment. But it's not exactly the perfect shape because it's been retrofitted. You know, it's not exactly what we would say the perfect ideal channel right now. It's a little bit different. So that's what they're saying. It's a little bit different than how you normally design from scratch. But they don't see that as insurmountable. They just see it as, okay, this is something that's causing you a little bit of a problem because you started with a design for different equipment, and you know, really almost 19 years ago, you know, when the design happened. At the moment, I do want to bring that forward because that's something that Bernie and Virgil and I were aware of, but you know, Virgil's leaving, and I was talking of schedule and what might need to get built and what not with Mike and Tina, and they were like, okay, we haven't heard this story, so let's do this story. So that's the story on UV.
With the UV, is it running, when the tests were conducted, was it running at full efficiency?
As far as we could tell, the UV equipment is working fine.
Okay.
We had an existing channel, and they warned us, hey, you better make sure there's new bulbs in there and all cleaned up and stuff like that. So we did that. We did all that stuff in the existing channel, and then we had the new brand new equipment in the second channel side by side. We tested each channel. They didn't behave exactly the same, which, you know, we're kind of, you know, but all the time we're running, we're meeting our limits. Like right now, we use both channels all the time, we meet limits all the time, you know, so it really does appear to just be a high flow problem. We don't see any deficiencies in the equipment. In fact, we're recertified the existing system and certified the new system. So we don't see any deficiencies in the amount of light. And the interesting thing about UV is kind of counterintuitive. You need light, but more light doesn't always do it. There's a relationship, like how close the water needs to be to the bulb is the whole key. So the water will penetrate like 1.5 inches. Mm-hmm. If you get too far away, it doesn't matter how much light you have, it just doesn't go through the water, you know, kind of thing. So the key with the turbulence is if the water doesn't go nice and straight through the bulbs, the water can move away from the lamps, and so that's kind of issue. So it's not necessarily an equipment thing. You can put out tons of light and still not disinfect if your channel isn't behaving properly. So that's the first item is UV disinfection. It has to be second on your list, but it's important because I'm going to talk about schedule, and that's in the middle of that schedule. So that's what it is. So the next two things are related. One is the NPDES permit schedule, and up front here I have our facility project schedule, which is essentially mirroring the permit, you know, kind of thing. So the first piece here is what our current plan is for what we're trying to get done between now and the time we have to meet permit compliance. Okay, so the schedule is, first off, we wanted to complete the master plan by July 2019. That may stretch a little bit based on a discussion we have later today, but at the moment, our current plan was to complete the master plan by July 2019. What's important about that is the master plan, for once and for all, take one final look at what we're going to build for the education and what we're going to do with plan one. Those are the two big questions in the master plan. Okay? Once we have the answers to those and what it's going to cost, then we start implementing things. Okay? So we were planning on beginning design somewhere between August and September 2019 Because basically, after the master plan, we'll have our costs set, updated, and this is what we're going to build. These are our new costs. And we need to reassess, do we have enough money, we don't have enough money, and what's our plan? We need to reassess our plan. So December of 2019.
Question.
Yes.
All three of these things, the nitrate, the UV, and the upgrades to plant number one, are independent. They're not codependent on each other in the design process. Is that correct?
The upgrade to plant one, I think the master plan is going to tell you to keep plant one. But if it does.
I'm sorry, what was
that? Okay, I think the master plan is going to tell you you need to keep plant one.
Okay.
Okay, you got a lot invested over there, and you need it. No matter what, we can't make the improvements at plant two without plant one running. It's not possible. Okay, because it's going to take a lot of construction. We've got to take facilities out of service at plant two to build one, right? We need plant one to run for us to build plant two. You could make the argument that when you're all done, forget about plant one. But at the moment, I think you're going to need plant one.
Well, the reason why I'm saying this is that if we're delaying in the testing then intrudes into the time we have potentially to design.
Yes.
And so if, rather than trying to design all three things at one time, we narrowly tailored the design to meet our deadlines.
Right.
And that could mean not dealing with plant one design at that time in order to meet our deadline.
It could, but the problem you're going to have is I got to turn plant one on and run for a year, at least to get plant two to go. And if you're going to keep plant one long term, you would need to make similar denitrification improvements to plant one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the question is, are you really going to invest a couple, $3 or $4 million into plant one and have an MCC that's 50 years old about ready to fall over and no standby generator and a couple other things that just aren't working in plant one? They kind of work, but they are beyond end of life. It's like, okay. But are you going to make on? So the question that we've always said is they would go together because you're going to have to build at plant one. You're already building there. You might as well fix the stuff at that time. Originally, we had plant one improvements sooner. Originally, we had plant one improvements a couple of years ago. And then a lot of discussion occurred about do we need plant one or we don't need plant one. Master plan said yes. Other people had different opinions because the flows had gone down. And so it got pushed. It got pushed back and back and back. My original plan was we should have plant one ready with these other minor improvements. I'll call it minor, but I think it was like maybe 2 million or something, or about 2 million improvements, just so that it was fully functional and operational when we had to get into the D9 project, kind of thing. As it is now, we're going to have to we have no choice. We've been pushing it off so long that, we're going to do a master plan, and we're going to make one final decision about what we do with plant one. But now you're out of time, because I can't envision you going making the denitrification improvements to plant one and not fixing the other stuff. It implies that you have a working plan, and we don't. You don't have a reliable, long-term working plan. You can work it, I'm saying, you get it done for a year or something like that, but it isn't going to carry you. The electrical gear is the original material. It's 40 years old, but it's the 70s. early 80s. This stuff is really old. And it sits outside. If you go over there, I can show you the stuff we're talking about. But I think the biggest money was replacement of the MCC. Originally, we were going to do a major rehab to the ditch, but we recognized as a backup role, it doesn't need to be perfect, it just needs to be functional. And that's where we cut down the cost. It was $4 million, and we said, if we just make it functional, we could probably get by with $2 million.
It was like 7 or 8, and then it went down to 4. There were 3 options.
Yeah.
Almost 8, 4, and then around.
Right, which is basically, let's do the minimum to at least think it's a functional plant. You're not going to run it all the time, but at least the gear there operates and it's going to last another 20 years. Right now, this stuff ain't lasting 20 years. In fact, I'd be questionable whether you turn the plant on and run it for a year right now, because we haven't run it in like 2 years, 2.5 years, maybe 3.
Yeah, they
and,
typically exercise it, but they don't.
They exercise it a little bit, and I don't know for sure how much they need to do that. I'm told that, but I've never seen it exercise, in simple terms.
So just up to speed, I know 4-8. We had talked back and forth about 2 million or 8 million, and I'm just talking on the D9 program. That isn't what you were just talking about. You're talking about plan one. So the D night on this calendar, where, is that the master plan that's going to give us the 2 or 8?
Yes.
Or someplace in between?
Yeah.
We'll
so
see.
Yes.
At that point in July.
Right now, the master plan says 8.
Yeah.
That's what the master plan says. Right. They evaluated several alternatives. The question has been, well, the flows have gone down. Is it really 8? Can we do something else? Right? Yeah. People keep asking, can we do something else? All right. We're taking one last chance. Can we do something else? That's what the master plan is going to tell us. And coming in basically in July, we're going to know our numbers for the change of plant 1. We're going to know our numbers for the 1990, and we're going to have an estimate for the UV.
Okay.
So we're going to know our costs,
okay,
essentially.
Which a huge difference means all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know,
so July we'll know the answer.
That's
and
our
that's how it fits.
That's
in.
Our
right. It might
what's
get delayed
my
a little
bit. Little bit, but at the moment.
July or thereabouts. Okay.
Yes.
And the one piece that I don't see here is the deadline we talked about the last time for the D9.
Yeah, so I have that for you right here on the next page. Right, so
the next page?
Next
okay,
handout.
I'm jumping in.
All right.
Let's work
okay.
Ahead. I'll work.
But if I implied here, at the bottom of number 7.
Yep.
So we say if we follow this plan, we finish all construction by September of 2022.
Yep.
This gives a 4 month to operate prior to permit change on Title 22 disinfection. That's the UV improvements. And about over 12 months, it's actually 16 months, for operation of the nitrate plant prior to permit change.
Okay. So last meeting you said you wanted at least 6 months of testing.
Correct.
So is that 6 months fit into the 12 or the 4?
Well, I think the UV's got more flexibility than the D9, but right now you get 12 over a little over 12 months in the D9.
So we'll have adequate time.
You have adequate time, right?
Okay.
You have adequate time. And you know, there are things happening. Like we did a job once and the bids were really high, and we came back and redesigned it and redid it, you know, and things like that. So you know, you want some flexibility in schedule. But the real thing, which we're going to talk about, this flexibility. The reason this flexibility is important is there's a lot of uncertainty in the data, which I'm going to go over with you guys. And because of what the data is telling us, they may end up recommending more facilities than we necessarily want to build because of uncertainty in the data. And the plan then would be, okay, if we build it soon enough, you have time to try the cheap option, I'll say. Try it out before your permit changes. And then you can see for sure, is it just we have bad test samples and our data's not good? Or is that really what the wastewater is? And you can run it for a while and see if you can make it work. And if you can't, you have time to make some changes for your permit changes, you know, kind of thing. But at least you're going in and not overbuilding it when you first start, which is something I'm going to bring up in this meeting today. Okay. But so that's the current schedule. So this is the schedule we've been telling you to follow for a couple of years now. Kind of pushing this along with CIP and different things. But this is basically the schedule we've been following along. Okay? Now, a lot of people can say, well, what does the permit say? What does it say or not? So just to get everybody on the same page, this is the next thing, this is our schedule as written in our NPDES permit. Okay? And what I've done is I've turned it in red, I've written if we've done it already, is this complete or not complete? What is this talking about? So the first thing was the filter project was written in here. And actually, I'm sorry. The first page is submitted method compliance. Ammonia and nitrogen plus. So you see 7 compliance schedules. Compliance schedule for ammonia and nitrogen plus nitrate. That's the schedule we're talking about. So we've been talking about this since 2004. We've been giving reports since 2004. Okay, and then we'd say, yeah, we did a financing plan, and yeah, we did some stuff, and you know, we've been kind of going along. So here we are, we completed we did do a financing plan in 2016. We gave it to them and said we're all good. But then things kind of got sideways. We didn't put it in the CIP in terms of the rate study. We did not include financing in the rate study. Even though we told the board our financing plan's done, this is what we're going to do. We didn't do it. Okay. So now we're coming along. What we have to do is we have to obtain funding by, when they did this permit, I gave them the dates, like the latest I could possibly do it. You know, right before the permit expired, I pushed the dates out as far as I could. But basically, you see, what we have left, obtain financing by 2021, approval of the board of the district by 2021, and complete design by 2022. Those are all later than what I had in my schedule, what I gave you here. Okay. The one new thing that I wrote in here is I wrote update 31 December 2019 for a complete financing plan. So basically, We just finished that one. They asked me, are you changing the schedule at all? And I said, I don't want to change any of the dates, but we do need an updated financing plan. I said, we've got to get that done. So we committed to them that by December 31st, 2019, we'll do an updated financing plan once we know what our costs are and things are going on. Okay.
What is included in that financing plan? So that I'm aware, I mean, we're not doing another rate study yet.
Yeah.
We're going to be, but
yeah.
And it will be included in it.
Right.
But I just want to make sure what is.
I don't think it's much at all. I think it really could be as much as we have this much in reserves, we got to make up this much.
Okay.
And we're either going to bond it and do a rate step and put it on rates, or we're going to borrow it, or whatever it is.
Okay.
It could literally be a one-page
newspaper.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
But it is a final commitment by the district that you have your financial house in order and you have a plan of what you're going to do, and you're going to follow that plan, right? So if you say we're going to do a new rate study, or we're just going to borrow it, and we have and our income's good enough to cover the borrowing, or whatever we say, we're going to have to go do it because you're running out of time. So this is 19-9. These are the true schedules for 19-9 right here. This is going to come back in our new permit. This exact schedule is going to come back in our new permit. Okay? And it gives us as much time as possible to run it and see what happens and make any adjustments if that's the case. Okay? The next page is Title 22 disinfection. And this is where I say we completed all this stuff for the turbidity part of it. The filters, those are all done, and if you flip the page again, you get to the UV. And in the UV analysis, basically, it pops basically 1 year before the Z-Nite project. We're supposed to be full Title 22 compliant on our disinfection. Now, again, for normal flows, we meet that limit right now. You know, we meet it for normal flows. You know, what we don't meet it for is the full plant flow if we actually ran the full plant flow through the plant. So we have a time period where we have to address that issue, and that time period is closing out, you know, a year ahead of the D9 project, essentially. Okay. So when you go back to our previous schedule, that's why you see one is done 4 months before the limit and one is done a little over 12 months before the limit. Okay, because they technically have a slightly different schedule for you to do. Now, by the way, when we wrote the schedule, we told them we would put the UV equipment in, but it was no guarantee that it worked right off the bat, so we wanted more time. That's why it's this way. They gave us more time when we did the UV. And then the last one is the filter. So if there's any question about dates, this is right out of our existing permit, and it's going to be in our new permit, just like this. And the one thing they're going to add, I've already talked to them, is the rate study, or not the rate study, but the financing plan by December 31 of this year. Okay.
On page 21, the second page of that, down on the bottom, you've got some notes I can read. I think it looks like startup.
Audits. Yeah, I was doing a back end of how much extra time.
This is an important question.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I was doing a back end of how much time we have there.
Okay.
Okay. So anyway, if there's any questions about what our permit says or doesn't say in terms of schedule, here's a copy of just that section for the thing. It was basically filters, D9, and UV. Filters are all done. UV and D9 are still in. That's the long story. Okay. In terms of our NPDES permit, we did submit all documents required for that permit. We had a meeting at the treatment plant with Bernie and the Regional Board Permit staff. We walked around the plant for a couple hours, and we answered their questions. One of their questions was an update on the schedule, and we basically told them the only change is to add an updated financing plan on December 31st. Okay. But they seemed pretty impressed. They did not bring up
who
a lot of stuff. So we have a new. It used to be James.
State Water.
So they have three people on staff, three other staff people, including one in charge of our permit. And they came around and they wanted to look at things, and then they wanted to talk to us about our permit.
Yeah.
You know, some things that you should be aware of in our permit is. They're probably going to adjust the schedule slightly to add the December 31 rate study, or not rate study, but financial plan. We talked to them about a recent violation we have. So we have a violation of what's called electrical conductivity. And that is a result of salinity salt in our wastewater. Okay. So we fought this problem really, really hard 8-9 years ago. number for this year under the guise of the closure gap. It's just our concentrations up at the closure gap, CMS. So we'll see what happens. But we did address that issue.
But the ban on water softeners was grandfathered, right?
What's
or anybody
that?
Who has one could.
Yeah, if you replace it, you got to change. But
so,
if you own one, you
so the
have
new builds won't have them, but all the old homes are going to hang
that's
on
right.
as long as
that's
they're
right.
Uh-huh. Is there any need to go in and say you've got to get them those replaced? Or can we even.
Well, at the moment, we're trying to see if they'll just change the number. And if they'll do that, then that's what we're going to live with.
And it may have no effect because, from my understanding, is when I heard about this, we looked into this to try to mitigate. And one was through an educational PSA about it, as I explained at the board meeting. But we also did some other research, and one of the things that Brentwood got hit with is they were mandated to actually buy back people's water softeners. And they bought back 3,000 of them at about $1,000 a piece. Plus, I think they paid some plumbers some money on top of that as well. And it didn't reduce, and at the end, it didn't reduce their situation
so
at all.
We did do a side-by-side study. We have one neighborhood where we were able to turn the water softener off, test for 2 weeks, turn it back on, test for 2 weeks. And there was some difference. It wasn't huge, but there was a difference in what we measured for that volatility. But at the moment, we would resist any retrofit
okay.
program.
Okay,
that's
cost.
Good.
You know. Good.
Okay. So now, the schedule on the NPDES permit, which is the first item on our schedule, is they're updating a few things that I know of. One is the ECDO, I hope. The other one is the financial plan schedule. They haven't told me anything else, so we're just going to have to wait and see what they say. They expect this thing out, you know, end of this month or in April to have our draft copy back to us. And then, well, no, I don't know what else they can hit us with, honestly. You know, it's like they're making us build so much stuff that I can't imagine what they would come up with.
Baptism water. Yeah. You've got to have a holy quality for baptism. That's nice.
Yeah. So that's the schedule in here. Probably by next meeting, I'm hoping to have the draft permit by next meeting, and then we'll know, right? So we'll let the sheet drop them, though. And that's also helpful with the master plan, because if our permit changes while the master plan is still going on, they can pick up the permit changes as part of the master plan. So we're hoping by next meeting we'll have an update on that. So that is the NPDES permit, UV disinfection we already talked about. So now for the master plan denitrification project, we started into the master plan last summer. We went out to RFP and we got Stantec. We signed a contract in November. We started reviewing all the data. Bernie gave us all the data. And we're like, okay, we have questions in the data. We want to take some more data because it's different than what it used to be in terms of some of these nitrogen numbers. So the whole point of the project is to remove nitrogen. Nitrogen comes in the plant primarily as ammonia. So it's urine, right? So nitrogen comes in the plant primarily as ammonia. And the ammonia numbers have gone up since 2013. Okay, so when we did the original master plan, ammonia used to run around 20 to 25. And now ammonia consistently runs around 30. Well, it doesn't sound like much, but that's a 30% increase in ammonia, okay? Which is what you expect, by the way, if your flow went down 30%, which it has. Okay, so that was consistent in terms of what happened. What was not consistent is the biological oxygen demand, the organic material that's in the wastewater that comes with the ammonia, did not go up. It went down slightly. It didn't really change much. And so that created some concerns about it, like data right, or good things. So there are some concerns about, are we sampling properly? So before you always say that there's a problem with wastewater, you're just like, are we sampling wrong, or are we doing something wrong with how we take the samples? So we did some more testing. It took a while to get it going, but we took a portable sampler instead of next to our current sampler. We set it side by side, and we took some tests. And that's the next sheet that we see here. So those tests started in January. At the end of January, and we ran it through February. So we ran it almost 4 weeks, but a little over 3 weeks. And the first one up is ammonia. So the blue line is what we call fixed. That's our current permanent mounted sampler in the wastewater that samples the wastewater. And the way it samples, by the way, is it measures the flow, and then every so many gallons, it sucks a little water out into a bottle, and it does that for 24 hours. So we end up with a wastewater. Slowly over 24 hours, got a little bit of every little bit gets in there, and then it's called a composite sample. So this is the best sample we can take because it's based on how many gallons of water coming through and pulses along. Okay. So initially the results you can see are very close to each other, but you can see after the first week or so, the results get really wacky. The two samples side by side start to have very diverging results. And that's a little cumbersome to us because ammonia is soluble. It's literally even liquid. So it seems very difficult for us to understand how they can be really different. I mean, it's one thing if it's solids, because you can say, well, one's kind of filtered out, and that's what we were kind of thinking. But in this case, it looked like it was good, and now it's, as you can see, the results. Interesting enough, the blue line kind of went down a little bit, red went up, but the historic, that the last couple of years, our ammonia's been averaging 30, and we have these spikes of ammonia over 35, just like the red shows here. So what's important about that is the whole point of the project. The entire point of the project is essentially to remove all the nitrogen that comes in with ammonia. So if you have 30% more nitrogen, what does that mean? 30% more stuff. Right, to get rid of it, you know, and so that's the problem. So this is the first chart that we got on results. So the next chart is ammonia over TKN, and this is where things get, for example, ammonia is NH3, it's NH3, and it's what comes in out of your urine, right? That's what comes out of your urine. There's other forms of nitrogen besides ammonia that are in wastewater. They're called organic nitrogen. And they're tied up, the nitrogen is tied up in organic compounds. You know, for example, DNA, the end in DNA is nitrogen, you know, in our bodies and stuff. So there's other forms of organic nitrogen that aren't ammonia that are nitrogen organic compounds that come in wastewater. So, but you have to treat all of them in. Our permit limit is total N, not just ammonia, but total N. So we have to account for all the nitrogens, which is ammonia plus organic nitrogen, and that's the thing called TKN. Just say it's total kaldel nitrogen, but it's basically the nitrogen that includes all the organic nitrogen, all the ammonia nitrogen. Well, the thing that's got us kind of annoyed with FGL, which is the lab that did the testing, is total nitrogen includes ammonia plus anything extra, in a simple term, right? By definition, total nitrogen should be more than ammonia. I mean, in a simple term. When you look at this chart, the ratio of ammonia over total nitrogen, you see that greater than one is impossible. What happens is, if ammonia is more than total nitrogen, then you're doing the total nitrogen test wrong. That's what we're telling you guys. We call it FGL. It's like, look, you have A plus B equals total. How can you give me a total less than A? You know, I mean, how can this be? You can't have, it's part of the whole. It can't be this way. FGL was unapologetic. They're just saying that's the way it is. We accused them of doing a test wrong and said, how can you call the test? What processing? And we're getting into their test procedures. I'm like, what are you doing? Are you sampling properly? You're doing your job right. We're calling the lab up and do it. They're not receptive to us telling you're not doing your job right, but they're basically saying this is the results. So what bothers us is all the times that the ammonia was higher than the TKN, which is a physical impossibility. It's physically impossible to be this way, but they're measuring it. And now it makes us question all the data. Remember, we're going to spend $8 million. Whether you spend 9 or 10 or 6 or 7 matters about this number. You know, so we don't want to rush in if we're not confident that we understand what the wastewater is. You know, it sets everything.
Is this unique to our plant now, or is this being seen as well?
This issue here is unique to our plant. I've never seen it before. Yeah. It's unique to this data set. Unique to what's going on very recently in the plant. Not just for this 3-week period, but the historical data for the last couple of years has gotten this way. And we're asking why. That's what stopped us in November. Like, wait a minute, why is this number this way?
We've been using the same testing lab.
I believe so, for the last 4 or 5 years. Now, in 2013, it was not this way. In 2013, when we had 3 years of data up to 2013, we did a master plan then. TKN was about 20% higher than ammonia. It was very consistent, very reasonable. Something happened in the testing, or we don't know what, but our data set changed over the last, between the last master plan and now, our data set's changed.
How long does it take? In other words, you did a 1-month test.
Yeah. to go take those extra samples and send them to McCann. Well, I suspect Meoli will cover FGL's costs. But we want to basically say, you know, get some results for mechanical. A couple things will happen. They'll either come back with the same thing and there's some mystery thing going on that we can't get. We don't know. Or they'll be different, but at least consistent among themselves. Because one of the things about this data set that's hard to take is, it's not just ammonia's higher, but ammonia's part of TKN. If your data set's not consistent with your own testing, you can tell me that TKN's less than ammonia. You know what I mean? It's like, your own tests aren't right. You know, so we're trying to get to, can we at least get a test that's right? And then agree that, all right, this tells us something. This tells us something.
Do we need to do a full month's worth of collection of the water?
Well, we're
sending samples in every week.
I want to start with 1 week just to see, are they different?
Or where I was going is, go to three labs. Two of them have got to be the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe that's right. So what I wanted to do first was, let's just do 1 week with a split sample to FGL and McCampbell and see what their results come back. If they're drastically different, then we'll go on to the next step.
Well, why don't we just jump ahead and just go to three labs?
Well, we could. The real question is a matter of cost, right?
Right. So, well, this is $5,000 to $10,000. Okay,
right.
We've got to double it up, so it's now, let's call it $15,000.
Well, that's for 1 week. All right, so
right.
$5,000 to $10,000 for 1 week.
But if we verify the lab that gave us this is not doing their job right, then we get some money back from them or something's going on.
I guess that's the only deal. The only can say not to pay them or something. I mean,
right.
You know.
Right, but that's why I'm saying if you just do the two, we don't get it. But if we've got the original and two separate labs, and those two come back pretty much the same, and these guys didn't, now we know we got a problem with them.
Right. Well, we certainly...
Because if you just did the two, and now we've got to go to three. We've got to do it over.
Right.
I'd rather do the three in the beginning.
Yeah.
So, verify.
Right now, in terms of authorization, so there's two things. There's schedule and then authorization for the mic. So Mike's limit is 10 to just authorize me to do something. If you go to two more labs, we're going to go to three, we're going to split it in thirds, you know, I would say then just go ahead and do it for 2 weeks rather than one, and let's just see what the results land where they land. But that's going to exceed, it's probably, I know it's going to exceed 10, and it may very well hit 20 or somewhere in there. I haven't called these labs to get these costs. I can talk to Bernie about what these samples cost from FGL, but I haven't called them yet to get an actual hard cost. Or, you know, for 20 samples with these many tests, what's the cost going to be? Because this is what I would normally do, like when we're going to do this. I haven't had time to do that yet, but I know it's going to be more than 10 if you split that. So that means I got to go to the board, and that means we've got to wait for the board to authorize that before we get going. So I was trying to balance schedule versus your authorization authority, you know,
and I understand. But if we do that and we come back and they're both different, we got to start it over. I would rather go with three.
I can get it on the April 3rd board meeting. If you give me the figures and the approximate cost for additional two labs,
right?
I can we'll write a staff report. We'll get it approved.
Right. So that's okay. So that's good. I can do all that. That will just mean we get approval on April 3rd. That's the Tuesday, right? Wednesday?
That's a Wednesday.
Wednesday, right? So the following week, probably April 10th or April 6th, we would start the testing.
So why don't we start the testing before?
I can do that, but if I start the testing before, you're authorizing the work before you authorize the money.
You're exposing,
Let me ask you this. Let me think of one other. Let me build on that for just a second. What if you were to collect the sample, begin collecting the samples, and you held the samples? Can't hold the samples.
There's a whole timeline certification. It's in a refrigerator. They got to test it in 24 hours.
Why don't we ask Yoda if they would be willing to front the cost, start the test earlier? They do the contract, and we reimburse Yoda for their stuff.
Okay, they would probably do that. You know, Bernie's gone right now. He's got two
on the timeframe. They're authorizing the test, we're gonna pay them back.
Actually, why don't you have, yeah, talk to Bernie and have them invoice it as an extra cost off the contract.
Right, so if they did that, then you could bring the invoice to the board for approval.
Correct.
And Randy, I'll be panicked if the board says no.
I'll show up. I'll show up and get a good story.
So, yeah, soon as Bernie gets back. If we need to have a round table, we'll do it. I think that's the way to do. They go out and they do things and they invoice us as a, you know, the extras off the contract all the time, right? So.
I think because of the need and the timing, this is so important, we've got to prove it one way or another, because it could cost us millions of dollars down the road.
Right.
It's not right.
Right.
So I don't think.
The answer is yes. We're talking about millions. I mean, let's go there. Stan Tech called me right now. I mean, I just spoke to them right before I walked in this meeting, and they're like, we can go with the data we have, but you are not going to make a result, because we have to be conservative. We have to pick a conservative number. We have to pick this number. And that means you're going to spend more than we told you last time, and you might need other things. And so that's where they're like, are you sure?
By verifying the test results, that's, from my standpoint, as a board, that's the most. The best way to go,
right?
The most brutal way to go.
Right. Yes.
So I'd like to just go back to 2013. That's when you said this changed.
Well, we had a certain data set that we used for the 2013 master plan, right? So that was for the data going up for 3 years in front of it, in front of 2010 to 2013 data set. Somewhere in the middle, that changed in the last 2 years now, we're here with this new data set that's showing ammonia and TKN. A is showing ammonia much higher, which is what we're expecting. But B is showing TKN. And unfortunately, they don't take TKN very often, but they have been taking it. And so they don't have a huge volume of data with TKN, but when they've been taking it, they've been running into these issues. You know,
well, experience says that if something changed fairly rapidly, that something changed to cause that.
Right.
We really researched to see what changed in our.
I can go back and try and see if there are any points like the day was here this day and here that day.
Well, even but if it's a week or a month, it
yeah,
could be something that
something changed. So
changed,
we can try
and it took
look
a week
back,
or two or seven.
But we were just comparing the 2 years leading up to this with the 2 years leading up to last time, and they were way different. You know?
I would say, in parallel with what we're doing here, is to really dig down into that 2013 process change.
Right.
And just look to see what happened to the plants.
Yeah. And again,
can't be weather because
right,
that's a question.
Well, of course, the real thing is this isn't the plant. This is what comes into the plant, right? So.
But it's the plant that processes, or where are you testing it on the front end?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we test this right before it does anything. It's like before we do anything to it. This is what's so important about this. It's like right before we do anything, what was it when we started? That's what this test.
So maybe Virgil installed nitrogen-rich pipes.
It's
we could blame
Virgil.
Could
be.
But something changed. I mean, it's caused by
something's
our research. And
I think
it's
lab did the changing at the lab. It did something to change the results of the lab.
Which
that's
would be fine on this side. Okay.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's, you've got to go to three. Yeah. Two of them will come out the same.
But then who else is that lab working with? And our, then another facility would have the same issues.
Yeah.
Now they aren't going to spit out
be.
Results to
do
it.
Could be, but let's listen. This is the only place I've seen this result. I've never seen, now, I don't, FGL does a lot of testing in Central Valley. They do a lot. I mean, they probably do all of the Veolia plants. I'm sure they do it at Mesa Vista. That's the Veolia plant.
Yeah, if they're in business and they're still making money, I would suspect they aren't.
What I will do is check Mesa Vista and see if it's FGL or Mesa Vista. And see
if you find another plant where they're real close and sometimes above or below,
yeah,
you might say maybe the lab.
Yeah.
This is pretty serious for me.
Right.
Any time.
Okay, so we're running out of time. We've got 5 minutes for the last chart, which I also want to explain to you. So the last chart. So we talked about what TKN, which is for you, the simplified version for you is this full nitrogen. That's the TKN. As an engineer, it means something different, but just simple enough. It's just whole nitrogen. Okay. The next thing is BOD. BOD is biological oxygen demand. And the way it's tested is you take the wastewater, you put it in a jar of water, and you watch the oxygen evaporate as the bugs grow. So the bugs grow, they eat the food, they suck up the oxygen goes away. So it's the demand. It's the demand. and antioxidant, but it's based upon how much organic food is in the bottle. That's what the other thing is. So it's a measure of how much organic food is in the wastewater. Okay? And what's important about it is we have to supply that oxygen to the process so that the bugs survive. They don't die. So the reason it's called VOD is it tells me as an engineer how much oxygen do I got to put into our process to keep that wastewater alive. Right? What's most important about this is the normal way we treat ammonia and nitrogen, the normal way it's done for almost all processes is you take the wastewater, you mix it with the bacteria in a low oxygen environment, you feed them a bunch of food, the bacteria grow like crazy, and what they do is they start looking around for oxygen to breathe. If you don't give them air, and they look around for nitrate, NO3, and nitrate, NO2, and they'll strip the oxygen off those molecules and they'll convert it to nitrogen. Nitrogen goes in the air and the bug will breathe. That's what happens, really. So there's a two-step process. The first is it comes in as ammonia. We aerate it like crazy. We use one kind of bacteria and we aerate it like crazy. And we take the ammonia and we convert it to nitrate, NO3. Now we have the nitrate. We take that nitrate and we put it in a new bacteria with a new bacteria. And we take all the oxygen away and we give it food like crazy. The bugs look around and see there's oxygen right there. It just happens to be next to the nitrogen. I'm just going to steal that oxygen. And then the nitrogen just goes away in the air. It floats up. It goes away in the air. That's how it's done. Whether it's in the master plan, we get simultaneous 99, whether it's separate anoxic basins, all the processes do exactly the same thing. But for all the processes to work, you have to have what's important is a ratio. How much nitrogen do you have to get rid of versus how much food do you have to give the nitrogen? So that's what this chart is showing us here. This is the total nitrogen to food ratio. If you don't have enough food, if your ratios aren't right, you have a problem. You don't have enough food to grow enough bacteria to steal that oxygen off the nitrogen. You have to add food then. Otherwise, you don't remove enough nitrogen. Okay, so therein lies the problem. Okay, so what's happened in Discovery Bay since the last master plan? Ammonia went up, so the total nitrogen went up. It went up 30%. Flows went down. BOD didn't move. Our food did not change. So what this chart is showing us is a very real variability, even in this three-week period, by the way, of total nitrogen BOD. Now, it turns out for design, the key number is 0.2. If you have 0.2, which means you have a lot of BOD to the amount of TPA, and if you have 0.2, you have enough food just coming for free down the wastewater. You don't need to add any food. You just need to put them in the right tank and give them the right condition, and the bugs will take care of themselves. Okay. But if you're less than 0.2, you have plenty of food. You have more food than you need. But if you're over 0.2 and you're up to 0.3 or 0.4 or 0.6, okay, what you're saying is I have more nitrogen than I have food coming in with the wastewater to treat it for free. You need to find a new food source, or you're not going to be able to move enough nitrogen. And this is a real rub. So we have two rubs that are going on in our data sets right now. The first is, we seem like we have a lab problem with nitrogen. How much total nitrogen do we really have, yes or no? We need to solve the total nitrogen problem because we're not getting good results on nitrogen. The second thing that's floating around right now is, we've had these low VOD numbers for years out here. Now, we thought the VOD would go up when the flow went down because people are still here. They're still eating the same amount of food. They still go to the bathroom the same amount they did before. The food normally goes down. But we're seeing all over the Central Valleys, and when the flows went down, concentration went up. That's what we've seen. Except here. Didn't happen here. So what we also hoped is maybe different sampling maybe changes the VOD result to also help out the VOD result. But we are seeing this disturbing trend of if this VOD doesn't go up, when we sit here, Stantec's saying we may have to add methanol, we may have to add vinegar, we may have to add something to the wastewater to treat the nitrogen. Well, that means you got to build a facility for it. That means you got an O&M cost to operate. We don't want to do any of that. And normally, in the Central Valley, we don't have to. Normally, we don't have to.
We're the only one that's coming. If that lab used the ammonia TKM number,
yeah,
and it put it with this number, then that's why this is going crazy.
Right, could be. You know, so that's what we're concerned about. So that's why we got to say we got to stop and make sure we address it.
That's why I said we got to.
Right. Now, as a
Central Valley is at this level of DOD, and we're not.
Yes.
That doesn't.
I agree.
Humans are humans.
I got engineers on the other line going, you know, how is this happening? You know, what's going on here? So the key here is we're going to do some more testing. But the other key here is if we have this chronic DOD and we just don't know why, if we have it and we just don't know why, this is where our schedule becomes so important. So we go back to our schedule. If the recommendation were to come out and saying, you know, 50-50 chance, you can build it straight up and it shouldn't work. We don't have the data to back that up. But there's a 50% chance if you build this and you just don't have enough food according to the data. What we would say is that if you stick to this schedule, we have some time. You have over 12 months. If you stick to this schedule, you have time. You can build the less expensive option and see what happens. And then if your wastewater really is that way, if it really is coming that way, the bugs will tell you, the biology will tell you. I mean, you're testing aside. The end result will still be the end result. It either works or it doesn't, you know. You could always then at that point in time test it for 6 months. If it didn't work, bring in some temporary food, test that, and you could always at least comply with your permit. And if you found out that you really did have that, that pump or really was just as some wacky thing going on here in Discovery Bay, you have time to work it after the fact. The only down the upside would be save the money up front and don't spend it unless you absolutely have to. And if you absolutely have to, it would just mean that we have to add on a little facility at the end and we could plan and make sure there's space for it and stuff like that. But that's where the schedule is important, to cover your last phase, which is the DOT phase.
Well, I would say we should keep the schedule as much as we can. Delay it even longer, but yeah, that's why, to me, the information you just gave us this afternoon is extremely important that these tests go as quick as possible.
Right, exactly. So that's where the July 1 comes back in, because we're now coming into April, so we wanted to do 3 weeks of three labs. We're not going to have those tests until the end of April. Then I got May, June, July, you know, so we're probably realistically, and of course, the total focus is going to be on nitrogen. I mean, that's the big part of this.
All right, if Bernie's leading our goal to give us a change order to do this testing, we can start testing next week.
All right, yes, we could. So the original plan that I was walking in here was I want to start testing next week on limited sample under Mark's authorization. So.
Yeah, but we can do it better and do it fast.
All right.
One question. Going back to page 23, the last page on your multi-phase.
Yeah.
Task 2 or phase 2?
On 23, you said?
Yeah, the last page of that.
Yeah.
The last page.
Right.
Is full compliance on 2030? This is the.
Oh, this is mercury.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's another one tacked a piggyback on top of.
Well, so for the mercury, what the regional board said we can do is just join the consortium, the, you know, whoever the methyl mercury consortium is. Essentially, pay your money and they'll take care of it. So, you know, okay. So
we got 8 million for DNAC. We're not looking at another multi-million.
Right. Yeah. So we already paid money. We took manual use too, right? You know, yeah. So we paid some like $10,000 up front and we paid them like something annually. And they go out and test the Delta. And it's basically all the agencies in the area do the same thing.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the update. And you're going to bring us future items. So at this moment,
this would probably be a standing update. This list here, all these items, would be a standing update. Oh, the last one I forgot, it's put on the diffuser.
Diffuser.
They had a meeting with Fish and Game and the Army Corps of Engineers to talk over the diffuser permits on April 4th. They want a new CEQA document done.
What?
You know, which would be required anyway because you're disturbing more than the next year. Stuff like that. So I think it's just mitigating the debt. So the town has traditionally done that. Virgil's hired somebody to do that. I don't know if you want to continue that practice or we want to hire somebody else or what do we do. But at any rate, there's a meeting on April 4th with a fishing game and Fish and Wildlife and the Army Corps of Engineers on the diffuser. And they're already hinting that they want to make sure no matter what, as part of the permit process, CEQA have to be. Which we do that anyway, because you can't go build anything without either. You have to do an NEC or something.
We'll talk more about it, but it's not on the agenda.